Hello and welcome to another episode of the Old Lady Speaks podcast on Black and White and Red All Over. I'm your host, Danny, coming to you for episode number 74. And remember, if you want to listen to us wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, I should say, feel free to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Podcasts. On all three of those platforms, search Black ampersand White, ampersand White, ampersand Red all over the place already. That's a good sign for the rest of this episode. So, knowing that, we shall bring in the crew here of Sam LaPresi. Hello, Sam.
How's it going today, Danny?
As you can tell from the intro, very well. Chucks, hello, Chucks.
Yeah, tongue twisters are tricky. And intros are actually more difficult than they look, sound. I never thought about this until, like, recently a podcast I was listening to mentioned that. So, yeah, they are more difficult than they sound.
Last but not least, Sergio. Hello, Sergio.
Hey, fellas. Happy to be here, as always. I'm happy that we're approaching the 70s because in three episodes time, I think we're going to get the last time that we can do the numbers gimmick. I think that's going to be the last time. Yeah, I'm excited for that. I'm looking forward to it.
Yes, we haven't done the numbers gimmick in almost 30 or so episodes, and all of a sudden, it'll be back, baby.
Opportunity will knock.
That's right.
And we will
take it. Well, as you can tell, we're in a good mood, and that's because Juventus, thankfully, came out of the international break with a very solid performance against an old chain-smoking pal of ours. And we're going to do something a little new here on the podcast. And we're going to start off with one main takeaway from the weekend. And we will start with Sergio, who brought up the numbers coming back. So, Sergio, your main takeaway from the weekend.
No, the biggest takeaway for me for this game was just how sometimes just destiny forces your hand and saves you from yourself. And I think that's what happened with Max Allegri and Adrian Rabiot in this game. I think the injury for Danilo, obviously you never want to see a guy get hurt. Hopefully he comes back soon. But that just forced his hand into finally taking Adrian Rabiot out of that left wing, putting him in that midfield spot. And surprisingly to no one except Max Allegri, I guess, the team looked so much better. Like, it looked so much more composed, such a better form. It's crazy, but if you put players in their positions, they tend to play better. And that's what happened. I think this was one of the better results for Juventus, not only because of the win, which was something that they definitely needed, but just because of how they played. I think it was just consistently one of the better performances they have had in terms of overall quality in the 90 minutes. So that's my biggest takeaway. I think, you know, it's been stop and start all season, but I think this is something that they can definitely build on if they actually build on this formation and build on this way of playing.
Chuck, your main takeaway, and make sure that it's Sam's.
No, mine is unlikely to be Sam's. No, my main takeaway from the game was someone I've talked about quite a bit over the last, I'll say, 6, 7, 8 months or so, and that's Dejan Kulusevski. I had been pretty critical of him for, I think, really most of last season, and then he did pretty well kind of end of last season, last few games last season, and coming into this season, started out pretty well, and then I'm pretty sure I'm on record saying that I was like, hey, well done, you know, well done, Kulusevski, and, you know, I sort of took back my words there and said, you know, he's improving well. But yeah, the Lazio game, man, it was just an example of just extremely, extremely frustrating aspects of this play. He'll get in good positions. He's technically, I mean, he is good. I mean, he can just good short passing, pretty decent long passes. I mean, that one long pass to Chiesa, of course, for the second goal, well, for the penalty leading up to the second goal, was excellent too. And defensively, he's pretty good too. I mean, he works hard and he just, you know, backs up his fullback on the right side. So yeah, I mean, you know, he just works hard, tactically smart, and he's just a good, you know, good chap. But it's just that he's the complete opposite of Chiesa in the sense that Chiesa has the ball and he knows what he's going to do. Like, he just knows, like, I'm going to, you know, like, I'm going to get past this player. I'm going to pass or I'm going to shoot. You can see he just absolutely has conviction about what he's going to do. Kulusevski, he just always seems in four minds of what he's going to do. And he seems to be changing his mind every second as he's on the ball. And it's just, you know, it's very frustrating. I think we all remember that one moment in the second half, I think it was, where he just great counterattack. He had the ball and he just essentially like stumbled over the ball. So yeah, very frustrating, but I mean, I still believe in him, but you know, he's just, I just, you know, you just want him to do better. You just know he can do better offensively anyway.
What you got, Samuel?
I got Luca Pellegrini, Danny, because dang, like that was a hell of a game from him. Felipe Anderson is one of the most informed wingers in the league right now, and he shut him down at to the point where Anderson was visibly angry at the fact that he couldn't get anything done on that side. And he was equal, just as good going forward. As his pass into Morata was the cause of that first penalty kick. He threw in a couple of nice crosses, a couple of good corner kicks even. And it just, it made me really happy to see, after all this time, him finally getting a chance in a Juve shirt and really delivering, which he's done when he has been playing this year. He's, you know, he was very good in the Napoli game for the time he was on the field. And this was a surprise start for him. I figured Sandro would get the call here, but Allegri put him on and he was nails. And as happy as I am for that, it also ticks me off, because why could we not have been seeing that we had this kind of guy 2 years ago when we had him at first? Why was he on loan for this long and just left for nothing? Yes, the sample size is very small. He has to replicate this, but this looks really, really good and really, really promising for him as a really viable option on that left back spot, to at least have a really good tandem with Alexandro, so that if one guy, you know, if Sandro needs a break, you have a reliable guy to go in. If not, pushing Sandro for that spot, because if he plays more like this, it's going to be difficult to justify putting him on the bench.
Yes, and we will now let's get into a little bit more of the Allegri versus Sarri battle. Obviously, it was the headliner coming in to this game, simply because Sarri replaced Allegri, and then obviously Sarri lasted all of one season, albeit a title winning season, and then was replaced by Andrea Pirlo, who has since been replaced by Max Allegri.
Always the simple plots.
it's always simple to say, as we've come to find out, which is about everything I've been trying to say today. So I feel like Max Allegri, this was obviously a classic kind of Allegri game. And, you know, you get two penalties, two very much correctly called penalties, I might add. And then Leonardo Bonucci, of course, the center back, scoring after a couple of forwards win the penalties. But this was Allegri really, you know, flexing his muscle over Sarri, I feel like. And obviously, no Ciro Immobile had a big impact on what Lazio was or wasn't able to do. But Allegri really, I mean, he just choked out any hope of Lazio doing anything. And I feel like my one big takeaway is that even though Lazio had so much more of the ball, especially in the first half, when they finished with one shot on target, and it wasn't even that dangerous of a shot on target. That just shows you, one, how well Juventus played, and just two, how well they executed Max Allegri's plan, which finally is nice to see.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I agree with you for the most part, because as well as that defensive game plan was played, there was a point with about 12 minutes to go where if Sarri had had an option on his bench any better than Vedat Muriqi, it's 1-1, because you had that ball in from Acerbi that Milinkovic-Savic headed back across, and somehow Muriqi contrived to jump late and miss the ball when he had a free header into the goal to tie the game. You know, imagine if Felipe Caicedo was still on Lazio, that's a 1-1 game. It was, I wrote this in my post-match, that it was, I was getting vibes of that game at the Olympico last year when, you know, Ronaldo scored early and it looked like we were in total control. And then one mistake with 10 seconds left saw Lazio equalize on the last kick of the game. And there were so many opportunities for Juve to end this thing by the hour mark. You know, within the first 5 minutes of the half, they could have scored three times of the second half. They could have scored three times. Probably should have scored three times or at least twice. That has to be improved on, because you can play the Allegri dance, the 1-0 dance, as much as you like, but you are running on that razor's edge, especially against teams like Lazio, teams like Atalanta on Saturday. You know, you play like that against Atalanta on Saturday, you have to be inch perfect. And Atalanta aren't going to be missing Duvan Zapata. So as much as the defensive game plan worked and worked very well, you've got to score more goals. You've got to score more goals from open play. You've got to get some of these counterattacks and chances, or just take the ball and make a couple of your own just to relieve your own pressure. But you cannot keep going into the last phases of the game up only 1-0 and expect every single time to win. You've got to put it away. That, and especially with two huge games coming up with Chelsea on Tuesday and with Atalanta, which could really be a major factor in the top four race, given that Atalanta are the next team up in the standings in fourth, Juve currently sitting either fifth or sixth, depending on how they write up the tiebreaker situation right now with Roma. You know, with Atalanta sitting right above, 4 points up, you lose that game and your chances of getting into the top four are going to take a real hit. So you've got to put games away, and you've got to do it quick, because you dance on the knife's edge enough, you're going to get cut.
Yeah, I definitely agree with your just overall sentiment there, Sam, because it is kind of ironic, because we had this whole 3-5-2/4-4-2. It did seem like a 3-5-2 at some points, I guess. I mean, it's hard to judge because Danilo came off so early.
I thought it was more, I thought after Danilo came on off, I thought it was kind of a 4-5-1.
Yeah. But I mean, like before Danilo came off, it's hard to judge because it was only like 15 minutes. So, you know, it's hard to.
It was looking 3-5-2-y, definitely.
Yeah. And LiveScore, LiveScore.com, which they tend to be quite on point with their formations and stuff, they had it listed as 3-5-2. But, you know, it is kind of ironic then that moving from this whole Rabiot experiment on the left to now a 4-5-1/4-3-3, which was after Danilo got injured, that, of course, you know, we looked better. Definitely looked a lot better, just kind of more coherent. Rabiot was, you know, fantastic as well, I thought, yesterday. But then, of course, you've created a solution, but then you've created another problem, which is when Dybala is fit again, you know, where is he going to play if we maintain a 4-3-3? Is it going to be that right-wing forward position again, where he drifts inside? I mean, you know, he can do an adequate job there, but I think we've seen him be in excellent form this year, for no surprise, because he's playing in his best position, which once again is, you know, as Sergio said, what a surprise that happens when you play players in their correct positions. You know, what a surprise that happens that they actually tend to play well then. But with just, okay, the team playing better, you know, what's going to happen to Dybala then? Is he then going to play center forward? Well, then you have to drop Morata, of course, which, yeah, I mean, Morata, I mean, he plays overall quite well. Not, you know, phenomenal, but he plays decently. But yeah, I mean, that's the conundrum there. And, you know, just with the whole attacking issue, there were times throughout the game where I just thought, like, man, this game really needs someone like Dybala to just kind of connect in terms of going forward. It needed someone to, like, you know, foot on the ball, playmaker, to get the ball and actually, like, kind of keep the ball flowing through the attack, rather than, okay, you play the ball straight to Morata. He has the ball and then he kind of tries and twists and turn out of it. But, you know, it kind of hits a bit of a wall. Not Morata's fault there, but I mean, he's more of a focal point rather than a distributor and rather than a playmaker. So, it's, you know, it's good to have a solution now and have Rabiot play in a, you know, his natural position and just have the team play, you know, yeah, just play better in the 4-3-3/4-5-1. But, you know, we've created sort of an extra problem, which, I have faith that Allegri can solve it. But, I'm curious to see what he'll do, if he'll switch back to his old system or keep the good thing going on.
Yeah, while I was watching the game, one of the Spanish announcers mentioned that all time with this win, Max Allegri is 7 wins and 2 draws against Maurizio Sarri-led teams, which felt like a lot. It felt very lopsided. I don't really know if that stat is correct, but what I can say is that it feels like Allegri has gotten the best of Sarri, you know, in the last number of times they have met. And I think this was another example of him just really understanding the limitations of this team and understanding where Lazio is strong. And that's in the midfield. That's the midfield. Lazio has a much, much better midfield than Juve. And I think the plan, with or without Danilo, Danilo's injury, I think the plan was very much, okay, you're going to have the ball. We're not going to control the midfield, but you're not really going to do a lot with it. And I think that was pretty much the whole game. Like Danny said, I mean, they had one shot on goal, and of course, Ciro Immobile not being there, you know, helps, but still, I think, you know, keeping a team with or without their starting striker to just one shot on goal, I think that's just the strategy working, you know, perfectly. And I do agree with Sam in the sense that it did look kind of like a 4-5-1 in defense, morphing kind of into a 4-3-3 in attack. I think that formation can work, and I think it will continue to work. It's going to be a problem for once Dybala is back, but I think that can very easily shift into a 4-4-2 with Morata and Dybala up front. But just having Chiesa and Cuadrado or Chiesa and Kulusevski on the wings, I think that's just going to help a lot. I think this team looked so much better with Chiesa on the wings and Juan Cuadrado as a fullback. Is it sustainable? I don't know, because Juan Cuadrado is not a fullback. I know we've tried this experiment before, and he's good for, you know, I mean, he's going to screw up defensively there because he's not a fullback, and that's fine. It sounds tempting because it's a formation that can sort of fit all your best players there. I don't know if they're going to, you know, keep doing it, but I can definitely say confidently, this is one of the better displays that we've seen from them. Not only because of the result, not only because of the way they played, but because it did look a bit more sustainable. I think the biggest win from this season up until now has been the Chelsea game. But, you know, you look at the way they played, you look at the formation, and you're like, okay, that's not sustainable. They're not going to be able to do that against every team or against in a whole season. You look at the game yesterday, and you can definitely see a scenario in which if they keep playing with the same formation, if they keep building on this, it is sustainable. It can work against any team, and it can work against any, you know, in European competition, in domestic competition. I think this is a path to sustainability for Juventus. And we've said this before, so, you know, take that with a grain of salt. But I am a little bit more hopeful in the things that I saw and the way they kind of figure out this game specifically that leads me to believe that they could keep this going.
Yes, we've said it many times before, especially the last couple of years.
We have. We are wrong often. I think that's something that people don't realize, but we are wrong very, very often.
For the record, Sarri has the one win over Allegri in league play. That was the Koulibaly goal at the very end of that. And then Napoli frittered that away the very next week against Fiorentina. I think he won the second leg of a Coppa semifinal, but lost the tie as well. I think that's the extent of his success.
Yeah, I think the stat might have been then 7 wins and 2 losses. Could have misheard that. But yeah, I mean, it does feel like historically Allegri has always gotten the best of Sarri in head-to-head matches.
That said, though, Sam, you kind of alluded to this. I don't think Lazio were all that bad yesterday, honestly. You know, I thought they were really, I mean, decent. I think the main problem was, and I was thinking about this yesterday, that sure, Ciro Immobile was injured, but it's pretty poor team management if you only have one center forward that you can rely on or that you trust in, you know, a big game. Because, I mean, obviously he's going to get injured / suspended someday. And then, I mean, you have nothing. I mean, if you only have that one center forward that you trust, then yeah, I mean, that's awfully risky, I think. So yeah, I mean, either, you know, selling Felipe Caicedo. Yeah, I mean, that looks like it was and Joaquin Correa too. But
Caicedo specialized in those late goals, though. Like, he was the super sub that came on and did something in the last 5 or 10 minutes. Like, I think last season he had like 3 goals in the last 5 minutes and or stoppage time to give Lazio points. And it's like, and it was a little bit of a surprise when they sold him. And yeah, the way that is now is just Immobile and Muriqui, who is going to go down as one of the major Serie A transfer busts of all time, because they brought him in for a significant amount of money and he has been bad.
Yeah, I think on the Paramount broadcast yesterday, they were talking about how, obviously, like Chuck said, you know, how kind of little faith they have in him. And then it was kind of just like, well, they got nobody else, so they might as well. And I'm just like, well, if you've reached that point, I mean, that kind of feels like, I mean, name a Juventus player over the last decade who has been brought in for a decent amount of money and then has just been buried on the bench. I mean, that's kind of like, well, you know, Locatelli's exhausted, McKinney's off injured or whatever. And I mean, Aaron Ramsey, I guess, I don't know. So, you know,
read my mind.
So it's just like, I don't know. It was funny just to see, or just to hear the reaction to him coming on. Cause it's like, you know, you could tell that they, Lazio just desperately missed Immobile. And then as we saw, you know, I mean, they're basically trying Milinkovic-Savic as a makeshift number nine or a target man. And it's like, well, I mean, if you're pulling your best midfielder out of position just to be a target man, that kind of shows you what kind of faith you have in your backup number nine. So, yeah, it was interesting to see Sarri try and do the things he thought might work, whereas obviously – a whole lot of the buttons that Allegri pushed, whether it was Pellegrini or you know, the formation in general, after Kulusevski came on, really, you know, paid off and did relatively well.
And Sarri's had success with that false nine before, because, you know, he was very successful with Dries Mertens. He was very successful with Dybala using a false nine when he didn't have a nine he thought he could trust, or a nine that, or if nine just flat out wasn't as good in the case of Dybala and Higuain. But which is why I thought that the Pedro thing might work yesterday, because Sarri knows how to do that. And he's done it with a significant amount of success before, but for whatever reason, Lazio just didn't have, I think part of it had to do with, you know, even when he was playing Mertens in the middle, when he was playing Dybala in the middle, he had guys that could head the ball. You know, you had all, you know, how many times did we did Jose Callejon, when he was on Sarri's Napoli, come just cut in for a bunch of headers off at his post from the, on the left side cross. You had Ronaldo, who could drift in and head the ball all the time, but there wasn't anybody in that vein with Lazio. And I think that's what really hurt them, because they could get the ball out wide and then they'd have to pass it around to try to find the lane to shoot the ball with, because no one, you know, unless Milinkovic-Savic was up trying to make a run, there wasn't anybody that could go up and win the ball in the box.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's also interesting with the whole false nine thing that Lazio made. I, you know, the only time I've really seen kind of that strikerless formation work is that time with Spain, when Fabregas was essentially center forward, which, I mean, you could even argue that that really, well, sort of didn't work, that they should have actually, that they underscored based on just on the amount of chances they made. But yeah, I mean, it's a very, very difficult system to play that kind of strikerless formation. But yeah, just one quick point I'll make on Juve's attack then before we sort of move on. I think this game, I touched on it earlier, showed the importance of Dybala to our team, because I think just that link, you know, that transition from, or that link between midfield and attack, what that is, you know, Dybala, that, I mean, it's so important. I really, really starting to appreciate the value of Dybala. And it's funny, because I said, you know, I was one of the people that said like, I guess we can let him leave. But now I really see just how important, because, you know, we talk about our offensive struggles. And I think, again, part of that is someone just kind of, you know, just carrying that ball from mid, or connecting that the play between midfield and attack so effectively, which Dybala does do. And when you don't have him, it's just it does, I think it does contribute to our lack of offensive output, that it's just, you know, the ball gets just stuck or just doesn't really flow through attack very well.
you know, it was surprising. I think we've been doing this podcast for like 20, 25 minutes and we hadn't crapped on Aaron Ramsey, which is, you know, a regularly scheduled moment to do it. So I'm happy
go
that
for
we
it,
already
Sergio.
Did it. I'm happy that we already did. I'm happy that we already, you know, maybe cross that in our checklist. But, you know, speaking of not having a lot of strikers, I think Juve kind of doesn't have a ton of reliable strikers right now. I think one of the guys that for me was probably one of the least impressive performers out there was Alvaro Morata. I think he kind of, you know, I know he did a lot of the nitty gritty dirty work. And it wasn't really a game that was going to be super high power defensively for Juventus. That was the game plan. But I was kind of, you know, I was kind of let down by him. I was kind of disappointed by his performance a little bit. I think when Moise Keane came on, I think the team immediately kind of, you know, shifted up a gear. I think he brought a lot of, you know, a different pace, a different skill, just much more work rate than what we were seeing from Morata. And I think, you know, Juventus does have a problem, I think, at the striker position. Whenever we know who Morata is, we know he's a hot and cold striker, and we know that he can, you know, be right up there with the best in the league when he's in one of his hot streaks. But he can also be really, really disappointing when he's on a cold streak. And I worry that, you know, Juventus doesn't really have anyone that can step up when that happens. And I kind of think that right now Morata is on a cold streak. And I wish we, you know, I kind of want to see more out of Moise Keane. I kind of want to see more out of Caio Jorge to see, you know, if they can become that guy next year or moving forward once Morata's loan deal ends. You know, I think that's going to be something interesting to look forward to.
Yeah, I do think that Keane really deserves a little bit more playing time at this point off of that performance. He was excellent in 15 minutes, and I think he needs to have more than 15 minutes.
For the record, Alvaro Morata, since his goal against AC Milan, that awesome counterattack right at the beginning of the game, and that was, what, middle of September? He has all of one goal in 11 games.
Yeah, that's tough. That's tough. And listen, that's what you're going to get with Alvaro Morata. We all know that. Juventus made a bet on really relying on him as their number one, you know, target man. Well, I guess they were kind of forced into it. They really didn't have a lot of other choices. But, you know, that's tough. When you rely on a guy that's such a, you know, inconsistent, that's who he is, you know, you're taking a big risk. And right now, I think Juventus is suffering a lot in that regard. And it has a lot to do with what Sam was saying, right? That they need to, you know, finish the games and they need to have a much more aggressive mentality. I think that a lot of that has to do with the fact that they just don't have a guy right now that can score those goals consistently. And unfortunately, you know, it is what it is. Unless Keane or Caio Jorge takes a massive leap and suddenly becomes that, you know, day in, day out guy, that's just who they're going to be. They're going to have to rely on Morata a lot. And that's not always a winning strategy.
Definitely. And now as we look ahead, obviously another big game in a week full of big games here coming up on Tuesday with Juventus heading to London to face Chelsea, the reigning Champions League winners, in what is possibly a game where Juventus could wrap up top spot in their Champions League group, which a few months ago, I don't know if anybody could have predicted that or even thought it was possible. So I'm actually going to dip into the well of Twitter questions here to get the Chelsea conversation going from @FomanJosh. Do we stand a chance against Chelsea with a depleted squad? And my response to that is just remember how depleted things were the last time Juventus played Chelsea.
Yeah, Chelsea were also a little bit depleted in a major area.
Minor details,
minor detail being N'Golo Kanté, who might be the best midfielder on the planet right now. But all you need is the draw to ensure top spot. Again, you know, top spot is not as huge a thing as it used to be. We've talked about that before on the podcast, but it's still nice. It's still a morale boost to go in the seed pot. I will say that getting the result that we need, very possible, but it is going to have to take the kind of game that we played against Chelsea, the kind of game we played against Lazio this time. And again, you cannot afford mistakes. But I wouldn't necessarily bet on it because I have no money and a child right now, but but
if you did,
I would put money on a draw for this. I do think Juve can dig out that 1 point and work from there.
Yeah, I think the game plan is pretty clear in the sense that they have a chance. I think they have a chance because they're going to do exactly what they did in Italy. They're going to, you know, essentially park the bus, grit their teeth, and hope to get lucky on a counter. I think if they did that when they were at home, they're definitely going to do that in London. And weirdly enough, it has proven to be a somewhat reliable strategy. They have won games like that. So, you know, whether or not they have a chance, absolutely they have a chance. I think, you know, the win that they just had, I think that's just going to be good for morale, for the vibes. I definitely think that they have a chance. Now, whether or not that actually happens, entirely different thing. Like Sam said, I don't know if I'd bet on it, but they're definitely going to go to London and pretty much try to replicate what happened in Italy. And look, they're playing really well. I think Matthijs de Ligt, Leo Bonucci just authored probably one of their better performances of the season, if not, well, I think one of the better, probably not the best, but one of the better performances of the season against Lazio. I think they're in good form. Can they park the bus in London for 90 minutes and go get away with a win or with a draw? I think that can definitely happen. I do give them a pretty fair shot. I'm a lot more confident in them going into this game than I was when Chelsea visited the Allianz Stadium, for sure. I think they have a solid blueprint to get that result.
Yeah, I don't have too much to add to that besides just kind of, I was just looking up some news about Lukaku, if he's fit. He remains a doubt for Tuesday's game, so we'll see. I mean, from experience of seeing how these things go, usually when big players like that are a doubt going into a game like this where they don't necessarily, where it's not do or die. I mean, it's not do or die for Chelsea, clearly, to win this. I doubt Tuchel will play him any more than like 15 minutes or so. So, I mean, hey, you know, that's good. Timo Werner is fit while he was on the bench for the game against Leicester City yesterday as well. So, yeah, just some updates on that. Yeah, I mean, I'm cautiously optimistic. I think it'll probably just be a very ugly, ugly draw. But Chelsea are in really good form. I mean, you know, they've missed their two main strikers, but they are still top of the league with a plus 26 goal difference. And yeah, 3 points out of City. So, you know, despite the win that we had earlier in the group stage, you know, I'll still be cautious for this one.
And another team that is not playing with another natural number nine up front. I mean, like you alluded to in the Leicester win this weekend, Chucks, it was, I believe, what, Kai Havertz up top, right, quote unquote, leading the line. So,
yep, it was. And then for, what was it, 62 minutes, and then Pulisic and Ziyech came on. So, yeah, a strikerless formation, that's in vogue these days.
And that goal differential, that's Thomas Tuchel in a nutshell, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It really is. It's I mean, it's quite remarkable, really. I'm just looking at the numbers as we speak. And yeah, 30 goals scored and a mere 4 conceded in 12 games.
We'll transition into a couple Twitter questions. We got a bunch of them, so it'll be around the horn with different questions for each person here. We will start with a question here from @RRusitano. Aaron Ramsey hurt or purposely held back to keep him fresh for a January sale? Sam, he's your boy. What do you think?
Hurt. Because not the answer. I mean, that's like playing a game of three card Monty. You know, it's not come. You know, the queen's not coming. I absolutely think he's hurt. I mean, because, you know, it wouldn't be a bad idea to throw him on every couple of minutes just as, you know, to say, hey, no, yeah, he's still got it. Mid table English club looking to, you know, Newcastle looking to get out of the relegation zone before you know, before the Saudis even have the chance to try to supersize you. Like, I do think he's hurt. I don't think that they're holding him out, because frankly, it's not all that certain that we'll be able to get rid of him, because that wage is huge, and who knows what anybody might actually pay for him. I mean, obviously it was a free transfer, so anything is profit as long as you take his wages into account. But unless the new Saudi owners at Newcastle are that desperate to try to get something in with, you know, rock bottom 6 points, I believe they've got 6 points right now, five off of safety, five below Leeds. That's,
and their brand new manager is out with COVID.
Yeah. It's, you know, they're the only team. They might be the only team in the entirety of the top five leagues that hasn't won a game yet in league play, though, given, Levante is also winless in La Liga, but like, you get my drift. They have just been terrible, and, you know, maybe picking up Ramsey and trying, hoping that he stays healthy there is, you know, kind of their desperation throw to get themselves out of the drop zone and avoid having to build back into the Premier League before they even can, you know, flex financial muscles to become the next City. But yeah, I definitely think he's still hurt, because he's always hurt.
Next one over to you, Chuck, since you love making predictions. From at Lap is Goat, will Juventus win a Champions League knockout round this season?
Oh, a knockout round. yeah, I mean, obvious answers. It all depends on who we draw, of course. Yeah, I'll give kind of a general answer on that. I think if we get, somewhat paradoxically, I think if we get a big team, like a, I don't know, PSG / City, or I don't know, United, although we could dispute if they're a big team still, but yeah, if we get like a big team like that, you know, PSG, City or something, I actually think we stand a chance, because I truly think that Juve is only remotely bothered to play well against big teams. Honestly, I'm becoming more and more convinced of that as time goes on. But if we draw, like, I don't know, if by some stroke of magic Sheriff or something makes it through, which, hey, they could. Then, you know, if we draw like a Sheriff, I think we'll mess it up, because it's just, it'll be so, so typical.
All right, Sergio, over to you, since you were mentioning him earlier. From at Johnny 0007. Moise Keane looked decent when subbed on against Lazio. Who should be the main striker, him or Alvaro Morata?
I think it really depends on which team. I think at this point in his career, I think Moise Keane, you know, this, I agree. I think he looked really well against Lazio. But I think at this point in his career, he kind of struggles a bit with the being that hold up guy, you know, kind of playing with your back against the goal. That's something that he definitely, I think, needs to improve. And I think that's something that Morata does a lot better than Keane at this point in their respective careers. Now, I think, for example, against a team like Lazio or against a team like Chelsea, in the way they're going to play, which is going to be very much trying to hit them on the counter, I think Moise Keane gives you a lot more, and I think can be a lot more, you know, aggressive. I think he has a lot more pace. I think he has a lot of flair. Like he threw a, like he made a couple moves against Lazio, which were really, really impressive playing in the counterattack. So I do hope to see Moise Keane against Chelsea, just because of the matchup. I think at this point, if you're Juventus, you don't really have a, you know, top complete striker that can play against any team. I think it really does depend against if you're going against a team at the bottom of the table and you're going to have to be in the attack. I think Alvaro Morata is still your better option. But if you're going to play in the counter, if you're just going to give them the ball and try to hit them on the counter, I think Moise Keane is the better player for doing that. Also, Morata is in really bad form as we were talking. So I think right now I would go with Moise Keane against Chelsea, and I would give him more minutes. I definitely think he deserves them now that he's healthy, and, you know, while Alvaro Morata kind of figures it out and kind of, you know, busts out of his lump, I think that that's going to help a lot for both the club and for a young guy like Moise Keane to start getting minutes in big matches, and especially a big match that I think is very suited to his skill set.
All right, next one over to Sam, since it's one of his favorite topics. From at Born Bruin 77, why the F do Juve players suffer all these muscle injuries? Is it fatigue, lack of therapy, incompetent medical staff? It's been going on for years under Max.
Or que lo nos dos. No, I mean, it is a hallmark of Max. It's been a hallmark of Max for quite some time. I mean, when I was writing for Bleacher Report, I remember mentioning Max Allegri's penchant for muscle injuries. I mean, you know, he wore Stefan El Shaarawy out that first year that El Shaarawy really broke out for AC Milan, that he never really was the same player again. That being said, I also think, you know, and this is one of the things that gets bandied around a lot when things like the Super League are brought up, which I think it's disingenuous to do it in that case. But the footballing calendar is just so crammed, and COVID only made it more so the last couple of years, that we're seeing a lot of these muscle injuries at Juve and everywhere else, just because these guys are at their breaking point, and there has to be a better way. I mean, I remember Thibaut Courtois right before the Nations League consolation game between Belgium and Italy last month was really pissed at having to play it at all. He was like, who cares about third place? We're not robots. Why do we have to play this extra game? Television money, obviously, that's the answer. But yeah, these guys are shot to hell at this point. And it's really, it's not good. And they need rest, and they're not going to be getting it, especially since, because of the World Cup next year being in November and December, the summer break is going to be that much shorter to try to accommodate it, most likely. So yeah, that's the main reason why we're seeing even more than usual. But it's also just a fact of life when Max Allegri is your coach. It's just exacerbated by this extreme fixture congestion that these guys just can't sustain.
All right, Chucks, next one over to you from at DLope 95. With Danilo now injured and Cuadrado going back to right back, do we strictly see a 4-3-3 from now on? And with this switch, do we see Rabiot playing his best ball since the first half of last season?
Yeah, so I guess I partly answered that kind of earlier in the podcast about just the dilemma of, you know, how are we going to fit Dybala into the team? Then, you know, what are we going to do with him? Play him in that false nine. Speaking of Morata being out of form, I mean, play him false nine, which I doubt. I mean, I doubt that. But just because, I mean, Allegri, I don't think Allegri has ever really done that. I don't think he's ever really been a false nine person. I think only Sarri tried that. So, but yeah, I doubt that. So yeah, really, it's, I mean, Dybala on the right wing, or yeah, we go back to 4-4-2 and play him centrally again. So, yeah, I think that is really the crucial determinant of whether we're going to play 4-4-2 or 4-3-3/4-5-1 is, what will Allegri want to do with Dybala? Assuming he's fit, which I suppose he will be. I mean, from what I understand, it was just, you know, the whole thing from the international break was as caution. And then I guess just, yeah, kind of fatigue slash, you know, precaution to not play him against Lazio. So yeah, I think it's going to depend on that. Assuming that we do play 4-3-3, then for sure, yeah, I mean, Rabiot I think will play much better. That said though, you know, I was thinking about this just before we came on. You know, obviously we've had all these issues with the 4-4-2 and we've expressed our opinions about it very much, but despite Rabiot playing on the left and our complaints about it, I mean, I honestly don't even think he's been on an individual performance level. I don't think he's even been all that catastrophically bad, just on an individual level with his performances. I don't remember a game where he's really like, oh my God, he's just absolutely God awful. Obviously it wasn't like, you know, Federico Chiesa level of performances, but I think it is just kind of testament to, you know, maybe Rabiot just being a better player than we give him credit for. To be able to play in such a position for so long, you know, out of position and still put in, I mean, you know, acceptable performances, really, and just steady performances. Again, not great, but still steady performances. But nevertheless, I mean, definitely centrally is, I mean, that's just his best position.
All right, Sergio, next one over to you, since you are the resident agent of chaos, and we are going to talk a little transfer rumor here real quick. From at Diego R. Naranjo, I know the Hazard rumors are probably nothing, but maybe he needs to leave Madrid to return to his best self. Should Juve give him a chance? I just might add, I want to say Eden Hazard's name, like the guy from El Chiringuito. So, you know, that's always fun. Hazard.
Yes, he should leave Real Madrid. I do agree with that part. You know, I think Real Madrid is You know, I don't like the team. I think that is very well known, but it is
second that.
Not every player is made to be successful there. I've been, because of the all-knowing Facebook algorithm, it's been, you know, sending me a bunch of links to old like La Liga videos because I clicked on something about Rafa Márquez once, and now it's like, oh, you like that? So here you go, like 1,000. And it's just, I forget how many players actually played in Real Madrid at one point. And a bunch of really, really good players. And you look back, it's like they didn't really perform great in Real Madrid. Arjen Robben was one of them. I think Michael Owen was one of them. Like so many players just came to Real Madrid and didn't perform. I think it's a tough environment to succeed. Not that you can't do it. I just think it's tough. And I don't think it devalues the quality of the player. I think Eden Hazard's still a potentially very talented guy, potentially very talented player that just hasn't really panned out in Real Madrid. And I think it is best for everyone at this point to part ways. Whether that is at Juve, that I struggle to say that. Technically, I guess he could fit a need, but because they don't really have a ton of guys that play on that left wing, but it's just adding more wingers to a problem that you already have enough wingers. Like, you don't really need him. And I can't really see a way of Juve getting him at anything resembling an affordable fee or, you know, an affordable wage. I just don't really see it. I think that's just nothing. And it's just one of those things that they need to fill the airwaves. And it's like, oh, it's a big name linked to a big club. That's it. Because I just don't see why Juventus would take that shot. I think that's just making a big bet on a guy going back to his previous form. And I just don't think that Juventus is at a point as a club that they need to be taking those risks. I think the best way forward for Hazard is just to kind of go to maybe a mid-table club in England or in Germany or something like that and try to get his form there with a team that is willing to make that bet and willing to take that risk that he can come back to being the guy that he has shown that he can be. But I just don't really see him at Juventus, no.
Plus, if we think that Aaron Ramsey has hurt a lot, Eden Hazard isn't exactly the model of fitness, is he?
Yeah, no, definitely not. They do not need to be taking in more injury-prone guys. That's the one thing they don't need. They don't need more wingers, and they don't need more injury-prone guys.
All right, we will wrap things up with this question here for everybody on a fun note. From @Juventino_BNA, is Leonardo Bonucci the striker we've been missing all along?
Certainly I don't know about the striker we've been missing all along. He's probably certainly the penalty taker that Italy's been missing all along.
Lately.
If you don't think that was a little bit of a state, he'll never say that was a statement, but I don't think that there's any, I don't think there's any doubt that it kind of was. I mean, that, And it's kind of hilarious too, because I remember in the 2013 Confederations Cup when Italy played Spain in the semifinals, and it was 0-0, went into a shootout, and it went 8, 9, 10 rounds. It was a long shootout. No, not 9 or 10, but it was 7 or 8 rounds the shootout went, and Bonucci was the last guy to go for Italy. Italy had shot first, and he went up, and you knew he was, and I looked at his face and I knew he was going to miss, and he skied it. And since that moment, he looks like he's taken that and made it a part of him and made a concerted effort that I'm never going to let that happen to me again. And now he's the guy that goes third in the order in shootouts at the national team level. And he's the second penalty taker on this team after Dybala. You know, I can't think of anybody else that would take one.
Aaron Ramsey.
Yeah, right. Ramsey would, is there a rule as to what would happen if Ramsey pulls his hamstring during the run up and can't actually address the ball?
It would only happen for Juventus, not for
I don't know. but yeah, so I don't, yeah, obviously, you know, he's not going to be, he's not the number, not the, you know, the number nine we've all been waiting for, because he doesn't have those instincts. But is he, is he the, you know, is he nails when it comes to getting down to the penalty spot nowadays? Yeah. Yeah, he is.
Well, given that we are the joint worst attack of the top 12 teams, why not? Why not? I mean, I can't lose too much there. I mean, hell, if he can score free kicks, or if he can take free kicks as well, hey, I mean, you know, time for a little upgrade and a pay bump for old Leonardo Bonucci. So, you know, why not? Although, if we did do that, then he wouldn't make those weird mistakes where he, like, sticks out his leg. And, like, we wouldn't have to see that anymore, you know, in defense where he, like, does that awkward, like, sticks the leg behind his back and then does the annoying.
well, I'll jump in before Sergio. Does that mean more Daniele Rugani?
Oh, my man. I mean, hey, it's redemption time. Everyone deserves redemption. Bernardeschi did it, so everybody. Pellegrini. Wow, okay, redemption. Technically, you never got a chance. So, yeah. Hey, why not? Why not?
Any plan that involves more Daniele Rugani is just null and void as far as I'm concerned. Like, I have no interest hearing any plan that involves giving Daniele Rugani more playing time than absolutely the necessary minutes that he has to play. Just as an aside, I think it's just fun when a center back is really good at PKs. I just enjoy that from a stylistic perspective, I guess. I don't know. I kind of like that. And honestly, people who listen to this podcast, people who read the blogs know that I'm, you know, Paulo Dybala's number one stan. But I honestly, I'd rather have Bonucci take the PKs. Paulo Dybala, for what a great player he is, I think he's always kind of been shaky with PKs. I don't feel super confident when he takes them. And with Bonucci, I just know he's going to score it. He's actually a really, really good PK taker. And you know, I just enjoy that. I enjoy that when the defender can, you know, make PKs and make them really well. That was something that I liked about the guy that was talking about, Rafa Márquez in Mexico. I think that was something great that he would take the PKs and he would take free kicks and stuff like that. So yeah, I'd rather have him be the full-time penalty taker, honestly.
According to Transfer Market, he's only missed 4 penalties since he became a Juventus player, Dybala. So I don't know. I mean, I personally trust him pretty damn well when he steps up, but that's just, I don't
fully
know.
Admit this is much more of a buy thing than maybe something that's stats based. I just know, just some dudes just give you more confidence, and I also think that's because he missed in a Coppa Italia final or semifinal or something, and that just kind of ruined the whole concept of him taking PKs. He's gonna keep taking them. He's a vice captain and he's good at them, like Sam's saying. Like, it's just a vibes thing mostly. It's just a perception thing. But yeah, it's always good to have a guy like Bonucci who you know that can step up to the spot and make them.
No stats, just vibes.
Exactly.
Great vibes.
That's really the level of analysis I'm aiming for all the time. It's like nothing based in reality, just like how I feel at the moment.
Going all the way back to his last season at Palermo, he's 25-4.
Does that include the one he technically missed against Zenit and then got lucky with?
Yeah. I mean, no, but he got lucky, and so that's fine. Like, you know, and that's for domestic competition.
Plus, the last 3 years, he hadn't really been taking all that many of them.
Yeah, that too, because Ronaldo had in the Champions League, he is 3-0, 3 missed, 3 taken, 3 scored, no misses.
I do not care for your stats and facts, Samuel. I said he's bad, and I'm sticking by it. I'm sticking with the take.
Yeah, that's basically a society these days, so you're well in line with that.
I refuse to acknowledge your facts right now.
Well, we will wrap things up on that very fact-based note.
Yeah, before we go political. Eh?
Exactly. Chuck Sinan. No. Thank you all for your Twitter questions. We always appreciate it. We got a whole lot of responses this week, and we always like when we can spread them around and do something around the horn like we did on this Zoom call. So as always, you can send your Twitter questions to us at Juventus Nation on Twitter. You can also follow us there as well as on Facebook. Search Black and White and Red All Over. You can also search that for your podcasting subscription needs, whether it is Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Podcasts. Search Black and White and Red All Over there. So with all the plugs out of the way, for Sam, for Chucks, and for the vibes-based Sergio Romero, this is Danny saying thank you very much for listening, and we will talk to you guys next week.